sack. Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and welcome to Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team, and I'm here with Becky Ivins. We're talking Oklahoma real estate. How are you doing this morning, Becky?
Oklahoma real estate on the move. There you go. I'm doing great. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing great. And listener, if you want to join in the conversation, give us a call at 405-840-1000, 840-1000. We'd love for you to join in. We're talking Oklahoma real estate today.
Yes, we are. And the question that we posed last week that we should talk about this week is,
is this market going to stay crazy like this? So this is new for Oklahoma, right? I mean, you've been doing real estate here for
a long time, or two years. Yes, a few years. and I've seen trends go up and down. I've seen the bubbles. I've seen the bubbles burst. Mm-hmm. And everyone talks about the 2008 bubble. That was nothing compared to the 80s bubble.
What was different?
Well, it was a little bit more localized because it was the
oil
and gas.
So one of my early memories was the Penn Square Bank, right? Mm-hmm. It failed, and it was caused this chain reaction to occur,
right?
And caused the housing, right? I mean, that was that all in the mix there. I mean, I was.
Well, we had savings and loans back then, and the savings and loans failed, and were gobbled up, and it just kept going. I searched one property that I had a buyer wanting to buy, and we couldn't find the seller because the seller had left the state to get employment. And finally, I found the bank that had the mortgage. And it was all grown up. Oh, you know, the weeds and stuff were, you know, eye high. And so I found the bank. Well, actually, it was a savings and loan. They had been bought by another savings and loan, which had been gobbled up by another savings and loan that was five deep. Finally found a bank that owned the mortgage. Nobody could even find the mortgages.
Wow.
Because you forget, this was in the 80s before everybody had computers. And that was, now that was a bubble bursting. That was a bubble heard around the world practically, right? But now we're going, well, is this going to last? At this, we had a 2008. And now are we going to have a 2022? What are we going to have here?
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about today, are the trends in the market. So we thought we would just kind of give you some of the trends that we've been seeing happen and that have been reported. And we kind of go back to our multiple listing service because that does have the raw data in it, right? So that we can look at it and see what our trends are. So what's one of the trends you've looked at, Mark?
So one of the trends that I know that we talk about is the supply. How many homes are out there to be sold? It's a supply and demand issue. And so, Becky, you always say that it kind of an even market is a 5-month supply, which means if no other home comes out for sale, new home being built or someone putting their home up for sale, it would sell out in 5 months. That would be roughly an even market. It means you have the same number of sellers as buyers. Then you get into what is a buyer's market, what's a seller's market. Well, pre-pandemic, we had 3 months of inventory before all this kind of began. And as the pandemic went on, our month supply went down and down and down until we had 1 month supply.
Right. So in numbers, what that really amounts to is typically we have about in, let's just take January of each year, right? Okay, starting back in 2018, and this has been real typical for a very long time, we have about 6,500 homes on the market in our multi-list. 6,500, okay? Then we go to January of 19, 1 year later. And how many do we have on the market? About 5,000. Well, that's still a good supply. Then we go January of 20, and we end up having about 4,800 or so on the market. Now, let's get to January of this year. How many did we have on the market? We had about 1,300 on the market. And since we sell about that many a month, I mean, in a month's time, mm-hmm. then we end up having not any supply. I mean, about a month, less than a month, about a half a month now, right?
It is. Yep. It's 0.6. So, I mean, okay. We're talking 3 weeks of inventory.
Well, and you better get in on the first half of that three-week inventory, because at 2 weeks, there's only going to be the bad ones on the market.
Right. Well, and that's – so if – means we have a lot more buyers out there than sellers.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. The things that are good homes are gone in a day.
What's a good
great
home,
homes?
What is a good home? Which ones are selling first? That's what you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Is, well – because there are some homes that, even though we've got such a hot market, they just sit there and don't sell. So what is a good home, and what homes don't sell? What would be one of your inclinations on that, Mark?
So problematic homes, things that have problems, like if they have maintenance issues or things that they have deferred, haven't fixed, haven't and have it priced it accordingly.
Well, how about one that has water standing in the backyard that is not a pool or a lake? sort of, but so much water that the ducks are landing thinking it's a pond, right?
Yeah.
So any problem, I've always said people will buy a project, but they will not buy a problem. Because you're not going to be willing to sell a little problem that looks like a big problem to a buyer. They just aren't going to buy it.
Especially a problem where they don't see potential. Like,
right.
Like we had the one listing. We had a listing that had had some uniqueness to it, but it had so much potential to it that because of location, because of kind of the makeup of the foundation or the footprint of the home.
Well, and the thing is, if you are going to have to spend a great deal of money on a house that doesn't show, say you need foundational piers, say you need the electrical system has something wrong with it, maybe you've got slab leaks under the slab of plumbing. Those all are costly. Maybe you've got active termites and you don't know how much termite damage you have. Active termites are a problem. If you can show there's no damage, no structural damage, not such a problem. You just fix the house up. But sinking $10,000, $20,000 under the ground for piers is hard for a buyer to wrap their head around, because they could have other problems at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So what homes are going to sell and what homes aren't going to sell?
We'll come back with more about what homes will sell and what homes won't on this, on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. We're talking about trends in the Oklahoma market. And Becky, what will and won't sell?
Well, okay. Sometimes folks look at this and go, they think that their home is going to sell for high dollar no matter what because the market's so hot. Well, not true. The properties that are going to sell and sell for really high dollar are the ones that have been very well maintained. And they have had updates. Now, if it was built 10 years ago, it probably needs updates to make it current. 10 years ago, we didn't have so much wood floor, hard surface floor. And, you know, something was posted on our realtor Facebook page this week about, okay, redoing a house in the 350 range and want to know whether to put like ceramic tile that looks like wood or luxury vinyl planks or vinyl tile that comes in, you know, strips. And there was a lot of discussion. I mean, there was about 80 people that chimed in on that. And as I was typing my response, another very seasoned realtor was typing a response. We said exactly the same thing. 350, haven't you thought about wood, engineered wood? Because that is kind of a pivot point. And my suggestion was engineered wood, and you'll get double that money back on engineered wood at that price point if your house is current in other ways. You know, it all is kind of hinges on everything else. And the neighborhood it sits in is still location, location, location.
I was talking with a friend that I hadn't seen in years, who I went to high school with yesterday, and he was asking about a feature in a does this feature, will it increase the value? And my question to him was, tell me about the neighborhood you live in. Because it matters what the other homes that it's going to be compared to are. If everyone has updated flooring around you and you're the only one who hasn't updated, does that affect the appraisal price?
A little bit, not much. But it's the sellability. Yes, it affects the sellability of that home. And things that are selling real well are outdoor spaces, decks, covered patios, gazebos out in the yard, the fire pits, the kitchens, the swimming pools, the hot tubs. Those are selling real well right now. You get your money back on those, basically, if you're wanting to do improvements to your home. And if you're wanting to do improvements, just a little word of caution here. Don't do them because it's going to make it sell for more money, because it will not. Improvements, well, you need to do before you sell. Like, do them 3 or 4 or 5 years before you sell so that you enjoy the improvements you're making. You're not going to get all your money back out of the house. Now, will you get more money back out of wood floor if you're in kind of our upper, mid to upper price range? Yes, you will. Better than vinyl, unless you're on an acreage. Then people prefer the ceramic tile or the more rugged stuff. Kind of depends on location, just like you went back to.
It's that location. Where do you see, like, people miss, like, they spend the money on their home to update, thinking it's going to get it back, and they don't? I mean, you just constantly, you're not going to get the money back on it.
People think that they're going to get so much money out of their kitchens and bathrooms. And that's forever. Everyone's told you that, right?
Yes.
Well, you can put a 6-burner gas Wolf stove in your kitchen that cost a fortune. You're not getting your money out of that. Most people... people eat out a lot. They want a nice-looking, functional stove in the kitchen. They do not want to spend $8,000 on a stove. You're not getting that money back. You might be able to sell it to the person that wants that stove, but you're not going to get the money back out of it. So that's kind of an example.
So
another thing that will keep a property from selling is if it has a functional and a dysfunctional floor plan. We know there's dysfunctional families. Well, they're not looking for dysfunctional floor plans, okay? Well, you would think we'd be able to sell those real well, right? Okay. What is a dysfunctional floor plan? Well, it's one where maybe a room's been added on, but you have to go through another room to get to it instead of a hallway. So, like, add a master bedroom on. Well, you go through what a small bedroom that's been turned into sort of a study home office to get to the master bedroom. Well, that's dysfunctional. And another dysfunctional plan is if you have, say you've got three bedrooms upstairs and you've got the master and downstairs. Well, if you have three bedrooms upstairs, you better have at least one bathroom, and that bathroom better have two sinks in the vanity, because you can't service three secondary bedrooms without a bathroom.
You have to think through the livability of that house. How does it actually function in the day-to-day? I was at showing a home yesterday in Midwest City that had a added bedroom. It was built in 1952. They added a bedroom right next to the kitchen that had a little half bath in it. And it was just so kind of awkwardly done that it didn't have the functionality of a full bedroom.
Well, how old was this house?
1952.
I was going to say.
Yep, 1952.
This was 50s then. Yeah. And that's not uncommon in Midwest City, because that was a settlement that settled a great deal post-war.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a lot of stuff like that. Very meager housing right after the war. Two bedroom, one bathroom. So people will build on another bedroom for a master, but if they did it pretty soon, it was still kind of meager, so it only had a half bath, and the whole family bathes in one bathroom. So not unusual so much, but not to our current livability standards, right?
That's where something that functioned probably well at the time and took care of the family that did it, it becomes very difficult in today. And that kind of goes to the question I have for you, Becky, on sweat equity. Because it looked like it was just a home project. Somebody had did it themselves.
I did that one time. I built a room on the back of a house, and my sister-in-law Janet and I did the... Now, we had a friend, Bill, that we went to church with and who did the electrical on it. It didn't have any... Well, it did have... We put a washer and dryer in there because we had like a little well house out back that had a washer and dryer. And so we moved that inside. But sweat equity. Okay. A lot of people say they want sweat equity. And actually, FHA loans, and I'm not sure about VA. We used to be able to do that. I'm not sure. No one's done that recently that I'm aware of. But FHA will allow you to get part of or all of your down payment through sweat equity. Well, that's where you work for. You improve the home in an equal value to what your down payment might be. And what was your experience with that? Most people think that they sweep the porch and put a little paint on the bedroom ceiling and maybe install a new faucet in the bathroom, right? Well, that's not worth much. And it has to be documented as to what you do. So most people, first of all, they don't have the money to buy the stuff up front to do the sweat equity. Mm-hmm. And then they don't have the time. People work a lot nowadays, and they don't have the time to actually do the sweat, the work to do it. I've had some of that, not in many years, though. And the house we had listed this week would have been perfect for that, because it had a room that had been built onto the back of it that was not with treated lumber and had not been painted. And we're talking about nearly 40 years mm-hmm. of weather on this. Had moss growing on the outside of it, was kind of wavy wood. It just needed to be removed. Now, that would have been a great example of sweat equity, because you could have removed all the wood and just made that a nice covered porch, right? But what'd your client think of that when you did it?
So I took my clients to there, and they had been talking about sweat equity. And they looked at that and went, that's too much sweat.
Yeah, right?
I was sitting there going, well, if you simply remove, you know, if you remove this, the home itself was immaculate.
Oh, been so
it
well
was
cared
so
for.
So great.
And it had been updated even.
Yeah.
The bathrooms have been updated with new counters and new tile around the, you know, in the shower and in the tub. It was very nice home. And it sold, of course, for cash.
It was a great place. And we're going to be talking about what's happening in the trends in the Oklahoma real estate market and what you can do with sweat equity on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team, here talking with Becky Ivins, and we're talking about what's happening in the Oklahoma market. There is a huge shift that's occurred. It, of course, has happened in all spectrums of life for us, and real estate has certainly been affected by this, and a lot of it has to do with supply and demand, where it's not just houses for sale, but it's the supplies that are the building of the houses or the remodeling or the re-roofing when it comes to shingles and just all the different nails. I mean, all the supplies are just low.
They are low.
It's time for our word of the day, brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing from a small repair to a complete replacement. Give them a call at 728-3700. That's 728-3700.
That'd be in the area code of 405, by the
way. Oh, that's right. We have to do 405.
Yes. And our word of the day today is what we've been talking about, which is trends. What are real estate trends? Well, are there any consistent patterns or change in the general direction of the real estate industry? And over the course of time, it causes a statistically noticeable change. So trends. And our trend is upward in price and downwards in availability of inventory. So that's brought to you by Robbins Roofing. And by the way, we're kind of expecting a little bit of a stormy week again this week. So jot down Robin's number. If you don't have it, just go to BeckyIvins.com and look at Becky's Favorites. It's a little tab across the top, and it'll say Becky's Favorites. And get on there, and you can just link right to Robin's Roofing.
Yep. If you're doing it from your phone, you can click on the number straight from there and give them a call.
728-3700.
I talked to Larry yesterday. He went out and checked a roof for one of our buyers, and it's kind of, you talk about why homes sometimes don't. It was the trifecta. We had Crown Foundation went out there, Classics Pest Control did the termite, and Robbins Roofing. But I think we're going to get all of that settled, yeah. Even for even problematic homes. If there's a solution, they'll sell.
Now you've got to go with actually a realtor that knows how to work their way through that rather than bust it out.
Yeah.
And make the deal go away. You need a way to work through it, because when you're working with a seller, Mark, it is like you've got to talk to the seller about what's another buyer likely going to require to be fixed. This buyer wants a lot. They want it treated for termites. They want some piers under the house to shore up the foundation or correct a foundation problem. They want a new roof put on it because it's got a hail-damaged roof. Well, what's another buyer likely to have? What are they going to get? And are they going to be willing to pay more for the house because it has a good roof, because it has a sturdy foundation, and it doesn't have live termites eating the wood? They're not going to be willing to pay more for your house They assume all those things are right to begin with, and we price it. We don't know that it might need structural piers. We're not engineers. We don't know whether or not, I mean, I don't climb on the roof. Never have. Have you? You don't climb on the roof.
No. No, not on my own house. Yes. On someone else's house? No.
Well, I'm not climbing on your roof either. Okay? So, the thing is, buyers assume those things are working. They read the disclosure, and the seller doesn't realize there's any problems to start with, usually. The sellers don't know that it's been a hail-damaged roof. You could have been out of town or thought, oh, that was just small hail. It didn't do anything to my roof, and maybe it did.
Right. And the question I ask to the buyer side of this is, and the buyers look at this and go, whoa, this has issues. You know, these are kind of big issues. And I ask them, I said, well, the seller probably didn't know. Seller's probably never been on the roof. So if the seller had known this years ago, last year, year before, and took care of it, and it was all fixed, would you want to buy it? Well, most of the time they say, well, yeah, if it was all taken care of. Well, let's give the seller an opportunity to fix them, to fix the issues now, and then we all are in a good place. It's a win-win.
Yes. Is the house worth a little bit more because those are fixed? Well, probably not worth any more because of the foundation, because somebody didn't know it needed foundation work. Probably not worth any more because of the termites, because everyone assumed it did not have termites. But the roof, you have more longevity with the roof when you've got new shingles on it. So maybe that would add a little bit of value to it. So,
if you have a question, want to join in the conversation, give us a call at 405-840-1000, 840-1000.
Hey, Mike, did you, Mr. Gannon, we had Denise from Norman calling about the hailstorm, and I'm just curious if he got the question from Denise. Denise, we're going to answer you. So, yes, there was hail in Norman.
There was two weeks ago. Okay, I thought maybe I missed a hailstorm this week.
I
remember 2 weeks ago it was just.
And it was jagged hail, so it caused a lot of damage, as Larry Robbins Roofing told us. So.
Yeah, and if you missed a show and we referenced something back, you can always go back and listen to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move through the iHeartMedia app or anywhere that you subscribe to a podcast. You can go back and re-listen, and especially with Larry Robbins with that hailstorm, listen to that. Now, Becky, this trend, we're talking about these trends, and there's been different spikes through the year. And during the break, Mike Gannon was telling me when he was a kid, the GM plant went in and Midwest City and everything like doubled in price, he said, in a year, because all of a sudden there is high demand for housing because of new plants there. We've had different times where spikes of that occurred.
What really was interesting when the GM plant went in, everyone assumed that Midwest City would grow, and frankly, more grew a lot. Because it was very easy to get to from Moore, Oklahoma, because of the positioning of the plant. Mm-hmm. And Boeing is a little bit like that, too. You get a lot of Norman grew because of Boeing, and a lot of Choctaw grew because of Boeing. So it's just where the housing is available for the price range of buyer. And Boeing folks, for the most part, can afford Choctaw and Norman. So that's where they're kind of settling in.
So right now, is it a long-lasting trend or is it a temporary spike?
Well, let's ask Martha, who's on the phone. Good morning, Martha. Do you have an answer for us?
Becky, I hope it's a trend.
Pardon?
Well, a trend going downwards for the buyer. Anyway, another thing you mentioned, and I'm wondering if this is a trend. Of course, the house sold for cash. Are most houses selling for cash? And is it still to a Texas and California market?
Well, I don't know about Texas. Texas is just a little bit higher of a price range market than what we have here in central Oklahoma.
Are the Texas and California folks buying our houses here in Oklahoma City?
California yes. folks are definitely buying our houses. In Texas, not so much. We
have buyers from Chicago. So I have buyers from Chicago, California, Arizona.
Active buyers we're working with. I know we have a lot of local buyers too, by the way. But we've got someone from Missouri, someone from Washington State.
What about Colorado and Kansas?
And Colorado.
Colorado.
For sure, Colorado, because that's mm-hmm. That's always a higher market than Oklahoma is price-wise.
Are they paying cash?
Some of them can pay cash because you sell your California home and you end up with a lot of money and you can buy a home cash here.
Yeah, your equity would be, I mean, they're $800,000 houses that are equivalent of our 250s and they walk away with $300,000 in equity.
Yeah.
Cash money.
So they do have some cash money to spend. But I will tell you that we don't sell all of our homes cash. We prefer cash, but we're not going to have our seller give up a lot of money because it's easier to sell a cash house. We want some homes need to sell cash, like the one that needed the work on it. A mortgage company would have required that work done, and the seller could sell it for cash without doing the work. So we did, right? So selling in a hot market, you still have to sell a good, sturdy house because there are a lot of houses that just sit there and don't sell.
Huh.
That's a great question. Now, Becky, I have a kind of tag-on question. Have you been surprised at the number of cash purchases that are occurring right now?
I have been kind of surprised at that. And I will tell you, one of the things that's happening, too, is family members that have money invested that are getting in the bank on CDs, maybe 1.5% interest. If they've got a grandson that needs to buy a $200,000 house, they can pretty easily make 3.5% by loaning it. And yet it's just the integrity of the person paying it back that's going to make the difference. So some of the cash is coming from investment money of family members. Mm-hmm. And we can talk more about that, but I've got a special smoking hot deal for you when we return with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK.
Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move.
Denise, thank you for calling back.
Hi.
Hi.
Kind of had some bad luck. We finally found a house after a year of looking to buy as a rental property. And 4 weeks later, the hailstorm hit. My question, we had windows, roof, siding, tons of things that went wrong. But is it better to hire a contractor to do it all or to act as our own contractor to have the roof done and then have the siding done? Do you see my...
Do you know something? I did this both ways. Okay, because I'm kind of a do-it-yourself type person. I want control. I want to hire each individual contractor by myself and control when they come and the quality and all this kind of stuff. It's not a winning proposition. The next time that happened, we had the same thing, some broken windows, the roof, the gutter, the pool tile, the pool furniture, you know, like the lawn furniture was all scuffed up and had dings in it and had to be repainted, not just repainted, but powder coated. And this time I hired Robbins Roofing. Now, by the way, Larry Robbins himself will tell you he's not the only good roofer and contractor in town, but he is a contractor and he is excellent. He took care
of... He does the siding and
He does everything.
Oh, okay.
And now they don't always, like he no longer does the guttering, but he has a company that does the guttering for him. And they're very, very good. And sometimes he has a construction crew. Over the years, over the last 20 years, that pendulum has swung one way and the other. But here's the crucial point of information you need. He will handle it all for you. He does not charge you extra for that. I will tell you that he does get paid extra from the insurance company for handling three or more disciplines at the same time.
Oh.
Your insurance company will not give you that money. It mm-hmm. has to be a contractor. So get a contractor to do it, because they will handle all of it. They'll know what to do first. Because what do you do first? Do you do your roof first, your gutter first, or you do the siding first? I mean, you need someone with some expertise there.
Does he do windows as well?
That definitely does.
Okay. That sounds like...
Yes, 728-3700.
728-3700.
Yeah. So it was 4 weeks after you closed all this happened?
Yeah.
Well, listen, I've been through this a few times where everybody's under contract to purchase, and then the hailstorm or the tornado hit, and then you've got a mess because you have to have the appraiser come back out on every single one. The home inspector, the insurance provider has to check to be sure the roof is okay, and it's a mess. So at least you have insurance in place. I hope you've got good insurance.
Well, yeah. I hope so, too.
Yeah, I do, too. And Brad Russell, the State Farm agent that I use, he covered that last week and said, call your insurance carrier and tell them on your rental properties that you want code coverage, because you have to put that underlayment on, and it's quite expensive. And if you don't have code coverage, that's out of your pocket.
Okay.
So... okay. Well.
All right. 728-3700. Is that correct?
Yes. 405-728-3700. Okay. Someone asked a question about fixing up a house south of Norman, say in the Noble and the Lake Thunderbird area. Would you put on a metal roof or would you put on shingles? Kind of depends on the price range of the home. Metal roof is for your upper end homes, and the asphalt shingles are for almost any price range home. So it's a preference.
Boy, that's a popular area that we have had several calls in that area. It's been a great show, Becky. Thanks for being a part of the conversation. Thank you, listeners, for calling in and being part and sending your questions. We're going to have more for you next week on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK.